Why do we sound so good? Because we're at Dead Aunt Thelma's studio and Mike Moore is engineering for us. Thanks, Dead Aunt Thelma's. Thanks, Mike. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I'm Susanna Mars. Well, we all like things that are wrapped up in beautiful packages with a neat bow, right? Well, it turns out things are not as neat as we all might like in the real world, and exploring our workplaces and communities, keeping equity, diversity, and inclusion in mind, I'm finding it is just plain messy. It's fascinating, but it's messy. So recently, well, this year, I encountered my first, and I hope last, experience of age discrimination, and I have learned so much about it. Including the fact that being declined the opportunity to vie for a job based on age is illegal at the state and federal levels. And there are many people who can help you if you've experienced this in your own workplace. And I would encourage anyone who thinks they have to talk about it with friends and maybe the H&R departments in their offices about what that means. Also, through that, I found myself questioning my own attractiveness as I age, especially as a woman who does a lot of work in the public. So these are big topics, and these things we could talk about for a very long time. But two people that I brought in to add to the conversation are Jane Vogel from Age and Gender Equity in the Arts. Hi, Jane.
Hello, Susanna.
Thanks for being here. And Amanda Squires from Skin by Lovely. Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So obviously, this is a huge topic, and I thought I'd start with the two things I've been wrestling with personally, the occurrence of age discrimination that I experienced and the options that I might have to combat the physical signs of aging. Both of those are kind of hot topics, really. I'll start with you, Jane. How are you addressing age bias in age and gender equity for the arts?
Age and gender equity in the arts is a social justice movement, mm-hmm. and I say we come to the table without answers, but with a lot of questions, because a lot of our bias is unconscious, and it's woven deeply into the fabric of society, and gender bias and ageism, I feel, are two areas that we still have a blank check in terms of being able to exhibit behaviors that are create barriers for women and barriers for women as they get older, for people as they get older. Mm-hmm. And there aren't too many repercussions for it yet.
It's so interesting because in my personal experience, it took me, I think, over 6 months to even realize that I had been discriminated
against
in regard to age. I just thought, especially because I'm an actress, that well, this is someone's right to decline me an audition or decline me the opportunity for a job. Not realizing that, though, in writing such a thing to me, that's the piece of the puzzle that is actually illegal, because we all have the right to vie for a job.
That's correct. And you say you hope it's the last. And unfortunately, it probably will not be the last. Mm-hmm. The thing is that all of these things occur on a continuum, mm-hmm. and the microaggressions that occur, I think that now that you've gone through this experience, you may be seeing more subtle ways in which these things happen every day.
Mm-hmm. And it's really sensitized me to other people in my field, and I've talked about it a lot with friends, really mm-hmm. kind of hashing it out for myself, what really happened to me, and kind of trying to separate it from my own personal emotions about myself. You know, it's helpful to talk to friends, and I'm finding, unfortunately, how many of my friends have experienced this. Mm-hmm. So, Amanda, as I said, part of the experience was kind of looking in the mirror and thinking, oh, it was very discouraging all of a sudden to look at myself and think, wow, I'm maturing. This is a new phase for me. And and what can I do? And a couple of friends said, well, you've got to go to Skin by Lovely and check it out. And so I came into contact with you, and that's an area I think what we talked about was really fascinating to me, and the way that you are able to help women who are interested to combat the physical signs of aging. Really, it's a physical thing.
Yeah, and I think it's more of a confidence thing, too. You know, we have people that come in who say the feedback I'm getting is that, oh, are you tired? Are you angry? Because the way in which our face ages can give that perception to people. And I think people struggle because they're like, is it vanity if I do this? But then if it makes me feel better about myself and, you know, gives me that extra boost of confidence to go for things that I ordinarily, you know, probably wouldn't have, you know, it's kind of a balance between the two. And, you know, I don't obviously don't think it's the right choice for everyone. I think it's a very personal choice, but I think it's something, it's nice to have the option out there that there are these less dramatic ways that we can subtly combat the signs of aging that we see on our face and the things that prompt people to tell us, oh, you look tired or you look angry, are you okay? Mm-hmm. And give us that negative feedback.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because even as I talk to various friends about the idea of doing this, it's almost like a secret society. Women don't like to talk about those kinds of things, and I'm not sure why. Do either of you guys have a feeling about that?
Why women don't want
to talk about doing aesthetic, cosmetic approach? Do you think it's because we still feel, you know, guilty about the vanity of it? Or as you were saying earlier, you know, women dye their hair, they take the gray roots out. You know, this is kind of a whole new frontier.
I feel that there's a lot of body shaming that goes on, a lot of shaming of women mm-hmm. in terms of the physical. And you know what I would like to see happen. So if, for myself, I was a trauma psychologist for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And I used to say that I would love in a perfect world to go out of business, mm-hmm. to have the world be a place where there wasn't that kind of pain that they needed to come and see me. And in a perfect world, I would love it if we didn't have a need for age and gender equity, mm-hmm. for us to be going in for cosmetic changes for a natural process. I do think that there are circumstances in cases of disfiguration due to accidents that aren't part of the natural process where you know, these things are really, really important. But I would like to, in concert, be working on changing what society's messages are for women. Because too often when there is a situation such as sexual harassment, what we ask the woman to do is to remove herself, to change something about herself, mm-hmm. to keep that from happening. And so with the aging process, being a natural process, I would love to see over time for us to embrace that. When I was younger, having dark skin was not attractive. Having Asian features or Jewish features was not attractive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had women putting chemicals on their bodies to change the color of their skin. I have two Chinese grandmothers, and I actually had when I went in for a routine eye exam, the doctor offered to make my eyes rounder. Mm. I never asked for that. And so I would just like us to be also working on whatever field we're in, to be looking at those messages and to see if we can create some awareness within ourselves and in the relationships that we're in and begin talking about it. And again, I don't know what the answers are.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. right on about looking at ourselves, because what I realized, like the other day I had my hair done. So you know, I have really kinky, curly hair, but I get it straightened sometimes. And I just like how it looks. And I'll see my silhouette walking somewhere and I'll think, oh, it's inside of me. And I would assume that you work with a lot of women, Amanda, who feel similarly about what you're able to give them in terms of, you know, that quick glance and just that boost of confidence.
Yeah, and I think that's where this comes in. It's not about necessarily changing who you are, or, you know, women don't necessarily come in. Most people tell me, you know, it's not that I want to look younger. I just want to look like a better version of myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like the person on the inside doesn't match the person on the outside because I'm still vibrant. I'm still doing all of these things. I'm physically active. But I feel like on the outside, people perceive me as, you know, not being that person, being someone that's getting older, that's tired, that's, you know, and just wanting that match between how they feel on the inside to match how they look on the outside and what they present to the world.
It's funny because I'm realizing for myself as I mature, just being okay with what I want to do is a big thing. And I think I'm still on the road, of course, of kind of shutting down all the noise that comes from out there and just kind of saying, hey, I'm going to try this. I'm cool with it. Some women are probably going to not love it, but by God. And that's something we were talking about earlier, the idea of being okay with discomfort.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And like opening up this kettle of fish and saying, hey, we're all okay. We get to do what we want to do.
Yeah. And having different points of view, be able to come to the same table, mm-hmm. and to be able to talk about it and to be able to hear each other, I think is very important. I also want to say that the messages, that noise that you talk about, that noise really comes from a white male dominated perspective, mm-hmm. because and that is not to say that white men are bad, because women are complicit in that too. We have all been groomed and programmed to, you know, to own those messages. They're in our brains, and so what my organization, our organization, is trying to do is to again just raise awareness about that, and to see if through the next generation we can make some different choices about that. And to me, the place to start is to make sure that we bring more women into leadership, that we have more women's voices mm-hmm. Speaking out.
How are the people that you're working with, Amanda, also, what are some of the instances where you've really seen somebody blossom as a result?
So I had one patient who unfortunately was a victim of domestic violence. She could see the signs on her face of going through that, and it affected her confidence. And we did very minimal work. I mean, enough that she saw a difference, but probably all of her friends, all of her family really didn't see that much of a difference. But to her, it was meaningful. And she came in and she said, you know, she's like, you've done such great work. She said, you know, I get all this attention now. You know, I feel more empowered. And she was like, it's all because of what you did. And it's not what I did. It's how that made her feel about herself that, you know, it gave her that little boost of confidence. And people are attracted to that. And I also feel, you know, the message that I get from a lot of women is they feel very guilty about this. I think we're perceive it as being selfish, something we're doing for ourselves whenever we do these things. And, you know, we're supposed to be giving to others. And this is something we're doing for ourselves. And there's a lot of guilt that goes along with that. And so, you know, as I said, I don't think it's the right choice for everyone. But I would also like to see, you know, us not kind of put that shame on people that choose to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a choice just like anything else. It may not be right for everyone, but, you know, I also think as women, we shouldn't judge other women who choose to do that because that's their choice for whatever personal reason they have going on.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And I agree with that. I think choice is very, very important and it's very empowering. I think that the piece that I would invite people to look at is if we support those messages that tell women that they're not okay mm-hmm. when it's a natural process.
It would be kind of cool to open the door to that. I mean, the fact is, you know, some women do this, some women don't, and just to be able to have open conversation about it. And of course, we were talking before we started recording, and today has been unveiled the Person of the Year for Time Magazine. It's pretty thrilling. It's #MeToo. And it feels as though this is a wonderful time for women to begin to be okay with opening the door for conversation, being uncomfortable. I think we're our gender. I'm happy to say, I think, that I've always felt women talking has always been a thing, you know, or finding ways to communicate. That seems to be one of our beautiful strengths. And not always, of course, this may be a stereotype, but in many cases, and that this is really exciting.
I'd agree.
Yeah. Yes, it's very, very exciting. Mm-hmm. It is hopefully a real watershed moment. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that it leads to equity for all women, mm-hmm. all women. It has to be intersectional. It has to be women of color. It has to be trans and people who identify as non-binary. It has to be people who have different levels of ableism, disabilities. It has to be all women.
It's kind of interesting because I know, of course, Jane works a lot in the theater world. And, you know, I'm wondering, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, so if anyone knows of one, email me, but a play in which a woman who has some kind of cosmetic intervention, if they're depicted as a warm, caring individual. I think often some of the women I see are depicted wealthy, you know, that this is something that only wealthy women can do, that it really is limited in that way, but it's not really the case, right?
It's not. You know, I mean, it's open to all levels, and it really depends on what you want to do. I would say the majority of women that come in have like one thing that they're like, you know, it's my frown lines. People perceive me as angry. Mm-hmm. You know, what can we do about that? Mm-hmm. And that's not redoing the total face. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of addressing that one issue, which is accessible for women.
Mm. Yeah. What you said earlier about the woman who was a victim of domestic abuse. I think of it as a person who's grieving. If you're grieving and you keep going back to the house in which the person you lost lived, I can't imagine what that would be like. I never thought about that, to look at your own self. And that's what was suffering. Mm-hmm. So to turn that around for someone seems as though it would be life changer.
And that was a way, I think, too, for her to take her power back, because it was, you know, when she looked in the mirror, she saw the evidence of the years of domestic violence. And now that she was out of that situation, she wanted to kind of take that back and take back the person she used to be. And she saw that as a way to do that. Mm-hmm. So that when she looked in the mirror, it wasn't that reminder of, oh, I was this person that was in this relationship for a long period of time.
Yeah. And as we were saying earlier, too, so many of these conversations could lead to a divisiveness if we're not, you know, being conscious about being open to just hearing each other's stories, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes.
So in terms of the age bias, are you seeing, or how are you encouraging, I know actresses of a certain age, you're encouraging people to hire actresses in a more mature category. How about in playwriting, in the world of playwriting? What are you seeing in terms of playwrights of a certain age?
Well, you know, Profile, who was the recipient of our grant in this year, 2017, mm-hmm. they are going to do an 18-month season with two playwrights, two mm-hmm. women playwrights who are older.
Right. Lisa Crone and Anna DeVere Smith.
Yes, yes. And that's exciting because playwrights tend to write about what they know. Mm-hmm. And so with a dominance of male playwrights being produced, we tend to have plays that are more male-centric themes. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, when women write, they have found that their plays tend to not be produced if they don't use a male protagonist and if they don't mm-hmm. write the male themes. And so even when we bring women playwrights into the fore, oftentimes their topics are what they think the market mm-hmm. is wanting. And so it's going to take some time to change this. And so what AGE is doing is we are continuing to offer grants. And through that, our application process, we are asking about, are you bringing in women playwrights? And are you casting women? And then are you casting women who are older. So mm-hmm. we're asking those questions. And again, we're not saying, and therefore you have to have these many. No, we're just asking, each theater company is unique in their mission. And we're just asking them, I think sometimes, and they have told us that by asking the question, it has caused them to look at things more intentionally. Mm-hmm. And that's the beginning. And none of us are at this is not about an end product. This is really about trying to shift the paradigm and just get people to be more intentional about what they're doing, and to also be respectful of what we don't know. We all have unconscious bias. We all have blind spots. And the only way we're going to be able to increase our awareness is to bring people together and to be talking and to be listening mm-hmm. to what people outside of our own choir have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about energetically when I think about plays, certain topics are very energetic, and maturation seems, there seems to be, and maybe correct me if this seems really off to you, but that energetically there's kind of an opening as I mature and maybe a little bit of a slowing down and a kind of a taking in. And I wonder if some of these ways of being for more mature people are not as exciting to depict, but yet they're really a part of our story. I wonder if that's part of the weird disconnect with the stories of maturation or mature characters.
That's absolutely true. We have a palate, mm-hmm. and our palate is accustomed to certain things. And when it comes to women and women's roles, we're used to women's being objects. Young women are sexually objectified. Older women are marginalized. They're made fun of. They're clueless. They're senile. And none of that is really truthful about our stories. Mm-hmm. Young women are very intelligent, very vibrant, very capable. Older women are also. Older women are also sexual beings. Mm-hmm. And yet our art is really perpetuating stereotypes. And that is not what art is about. Art is about creating new frontiers. It's about moving civilization forward. Mm-hmm. And that is what we have to challenge ourselves to do.
Yeah. I recently saw The Humans, and I felt at Artist Rep, and I really felt that that had a beautiful breadth. And disclaimer, I'm a resident artist at Artist Repertory Theater, but I just really enjoyed the breadth of women in the piece. I thought that mm-hmm. there was a really beautiful arc of
yes.
ages and experience and...
Yes.
I guess I would say go see it if you are so inclined.
Yes.
I would be interested, you know, with all the women in age and gender equity in the arts, you know, if we were to say, hey, Amanda's over at Skim by Lovely. If you're interested in doing this, come on, let's all check it out. See, you know, I wonder how many women in our coterie, our community, you know, would be interested or even, you know, curious about it. Again, it's kind of the code of silence kind of looms over the idea. But as I said, the friends who encouraged me to see you in the first place, they were so adamant about it. It was hilarious. They're like, oh my God, you've got to do this. It's so much fun. You won't believe it. I almost felt like I was going to go, you know, I'm going to go get a makeover or something or get my hair done.
And they're definitely, you know, one of the things that I've kind of learned through this is there's an art for doing things for people that are on stage, because I get actors and actresses that come in and say, you know, I need to still be able to show expression.
Right.
You can't like freeze my face, which I don't do that anyway. Mm-hmm. I like to have natural movement, but, you know, making sure that people can still express themselves on stage with facial movements and that sort of thing, and kind of highlighting their features rather than trying to kind of create this mask.
Well, that brings up another point. When you have a procedure, depending upon what you do, is it irreversible?
It's not. You know, Botox wears off. Mm-hmm. If you absolutely hate it, worst case scenario, you have it for 3 months. Mm-hmm. However, most of the things people don't like about the way Botox looks on people can be modified. You know, mm-hmm. you see the people with the big spocked eyebrow. Mm-hmm. That's an easy fix if it happens. Mm-hmm. It's not something you have to live with. Same with filler. If you absolutely hate the way it looks, there's an enzyme that dissolves it. Mm. So, and it's you know, if you want to just let it wear its course, our body naturally breaks it down because it's hyaluronic acid, which is something that naturally occurs in our skin. So our body just breaks it down like it does our own natural hyaluronic acid. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you're permanently altering yourself by doing these things. You know, it's all temporary. And if you don't like it, you know, it's not something that you have to, it's not like you're going to look worse for having done it once and you don't continue it. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because, of course, in the performing world, I'm always watching television, for instance, and you think, oh, wow, they went overboard. But, and it's interesting, even when I say that, I think, well, golly, that's their prerogative. That's, you know, what they like to do. So go for it.
I do feel bad because I feel like it gives aesthetics a bad name because the people we know, because we don't talk about it, mm-hmm. the people we know of that have had work done, it's because they look strange,
right?
Rather than, you know, having this kind of natural approach to things where you can do it and still look like yourself. I like to say whenever I'm doing these kind of rejuvenations, I'm doing restoration, not augmentation. I'm not trying to give you cheeks you never had. I'm trying to, you know, give you the ones that you used to have and kind of bring back, you know, kind of a restoration standpoint rather than this character of yourself.
And you know, DNA plays such a part in how you age. And I'm certainly, I have several friends, they just don't age the same way I do. And that's, you know, another piece of how we're all different and want to do different things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So what do you guys think about the hashtag Me Too?
The silence breakers.
What are you going to do later today in regard to it? Anything?
I hope we can. My only hope is that we can take this momentum and make meaningful change with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great that everyone's coming out and that they're saying, you know, this has happened to me too. But I want to see that roll into a change, a lasting change,
mm-hmm.
Rather than be something that gets like all this momentum and then just goes away.
And on that note, I want to plug that one of the things that Age and Gender Equity is planning on doing is for the year 2020, is that we want to do actually a national movement that encompasses all the arts, not just theater, but the visual arts and music, where we invite all art entities for the season 2020 to mm-hmm. intentionally program 51% or better women. And the second piece to that is where they intentionally look at policies and practices that advance intersectional gender equity. Mm. So this is something that, you know, we'd like to, using social media, be able to create some kind of a hashtag to keep this momentum going.
So if anyone has an idea for a hashtag, they could submit it to you at ageinthearts.org.
Yes.
Great. Well, Jane, thank you so much. And thank you, Amanda. Kind of a big topic today coming from, well, lots of facets to it. And these are just two of probably, I don't know, thousands. So mm-hmm. keep the conversation going. And I encourage anyone who feels as though that if they've experienced any kind of bias or inequity, talk to people and empower yourself. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.